Case United States v. Pantazelos. Ms. Varner.
Thank you. I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal. Abuse of discretion is a difficult standard to be in front of this court. Abuse of discretion means more than an impression that this court would have made a different decision when faced with the same circumstances that the district court judge faced. It means instead that there must be a decision that strikes this court as fundamentally wrong, and we believe that's the situation that's before this court today. Mr. Pantazelos, before sentencing, submitted a memo asking the district court to, by analogy to 4A1.3, look at his criminal history level and apply a below-guideline sentence. This court has never looked at, as pointed out in the brief, this court has never looked at a criminal history as insignificant and minor as that of Mr. Pantazelos and upheld a sentence where the court failed to credit that argument.
Why was his license suspended?
We don't have that information. The information that's in the record is that it was a financial consideration for him. He wasn't suspended for driving under the influence. And that's an additional factor that we would say the district court should have considered, because 4A1.3 is concerned with...
So he was arrested after his suspension. Now, what was it that got him arrested? Was it speeding or what?
All of his priors related to the first in 2007 was operation of an uninsured vehicle. 2008.
I understand, but there has to be some incident that he's stopped and they discover that he's driving with a suspended license.
That information is also not in the record. All we have, the PSR states that there's no information available about those offenses. So I'm not sure why he was stopped, but we do know that they both resulted from driving on a suspended license. Even in the case cited by the government, Martinez, this court looked at, there are some factual similarities to that case. The defendant in that case had two convictions for driving on a suspended license within 3 months of one another. However, that defendant had six of those offenses that did not count toward the criminal history. He also had a juvenile possession of cocaine and an unsatisfactory discharge from probation. Mr. Pantazelos has none of those same criteria. The only other arrests on his record at all were alteration of a historic structure, which was dismissed for compliance, and a 2012 $100 check that he passed at a veterinary clinic, which was a bad check.
Ms. Varner, have we ever held that a properly calculated guideline sentence was not reasonable?
I have no information. I couldn't find anything on the record to suggest that. However,
I've been keeping an eye out for such a holding. I know the Eighth Circuit did it once in a very unusual situation, but it's a very, very rare circumstance you're arguing for here.
It is. The guidelines, I would argue that the guidelines still loom large within a case. The district court is required to calculate that guideline range and makes that the benchmark for the sentence.
And it's got presumed it correctly here, right?
Correct.
Okay,
it is presumed reasonable by this court. However, even post-Booker, this court continues to look at a district court's failure to grant a motion for this variance under the reasonableness standard. And we would argue that in this particular instance, this was an abuse of the district court's discretion.
In your... brief, I thought you suggested that the district court misunderstood circuit precedent in some way.
It wasn't clear
to me what
correct
what that was or what the basis for it was.
I would agree with the government that the government did state correctly at the sentencing hearing the holding of that case, but I still believe that the district court judge misconstrued the Martinez case as this court saying driving on a suspended license is not a minor offense. And instead, all this court said in Martinez was, based on the record that it was before the district court judge, we're not prepared to say that that was an abuse of discretion.
How much did the priors for driving on a suspended license elevate the range?
He got 1 point each for the 2008 convictions, and he got 2 points for arrest on the current charge while on probation for those. which resulted in 4 points, a criminal history category of 3. If it, in the sentencing memo submitted by the defendant, they asked for a criminal history category of 1, which would have been an 87 to 108-month range. That would have been 3 years below what he actually got. If he would have applied, oh, I'm sorry, that would be 78 to 97 range. If they would have applied a category of 2 instead of 3, that would have been 87 to 108. And at the low end of that range, that would have been an additional 2 years below the sentence he received at the district court.
Are these misdemeanors, these driving offenses?
Correct. They only counted toward his criminal history category under Chapter 4 because he received 24 months probation on each of those 2008 charges.
Oh, wait. Because of what?
He received 24 months probation on each of those charges, the 2008 driving under a suspended license.
And these are Illinois convictions?
Yes.
And does Illinois suspend driver's license criminally based on nonpayment of fines?
I don't know the answer to that question.
You raised the financial issue that these weren't drunk driving related. These weren't related to other serious moving violations like fleeing an officer.
It had, right.
Had something to do with finances?
Yes. The only information that we have in the record is that the defense counsel stated at the time of sentencing that these were financial. These charges were caused by financial considerations and not because his driving under the influence or anything related to what we would argue presented a danger to the community.
Well, the crime of driving an uninsured vehicle certainly poses dangers not unlike the fraud for which he was convicted, right?
Mm-hmm. That may be the case if you're speaking in terms of fraud, but I believe that 4A1.3 is most concerned with violence. Defendants with a history of violence or that present a danger to the community, and in these particular cases,
the danger to the community need not be limited to physical violence. Prior fraud convictions count just as prior robbery convictions do, right?
Correct, but I believe that in a reasonableness inquiry, as is before this court, we have to consider, you know, a financial suspension of your driver's license versus driving under the influence.
Judge Reinhardt saw somebody, I've forgotten his exact phrasing, but somebody who had, in essence, repeatedly disregarded the law, his financial responsibilities to society and to his victims. I may be embellishing a little bit, but that seems like pretty reasonable logic to me.
That is what the district court stated at the time of sentencing, but in a review of case law, again, we have to, it's our duty to come and ask this court if we're going to have an abuse of discretion in the district court's decision to not apply, even by analogy, 4A1.3, is driving on a suspended license on two instances in his criminal history, is this the case
exact difference did the... Did the criminal history 3 versus a 1 make in his sentence?
A 3 versus a 1 was a difference of about 3 years.
Pardon?
It was a difference of about 3 years for him on his sentence. He received 114 months.
Is that 3 years just in terms of the guidelines range or how the judge? Did the judge just sentence in the range?
And yes, the judge sentenced within the range. The range was 97 to 121, and he got 114. My calculation is the low end of the ranges, that would have been about a three-year difference on his sentence.
So the range under criminal history category 1 would have been what?
78 to 97.
78 to 97. Mm-hmm. And he got 114.
Correct.
So that's a substantial difference.
Substantial for Mr. Pantazelos, yes.
Okay.
See, my time has expired.
Thank you, Ms. Varner. Mr. Versaman.
May it please the court. What the appellant is asking this court to do.
What do you think he would have gotten under criminal history 1? Does Judge Reinhardt like the midpoint of the range? Like midpoints?
He does generally. In this case, Your Honor, though, I would point out that Judge Reinhardt referred to Mr. Panizelos' conduct in this case as detestable. And one of the things that Judge Reinhardt did is not only to examine the chronology of the defendant's criminal history and what that said about his refusal to comply with the law and committing the same offense over and over again in a short period of time. He also looked at the seriousness of this particular offense, which is one of the 3553A factors that he was required to analyze. And in looking at the seriousness of the offense, the Judge Reinhart found that the defendant had engaged in detestable conduct. He had.
Now, are you talking about the driving?
No, Your Honor. I'm talking about the underlying Ponzi scheme, the
Well, we're just talking about the criminal history.
That's correct, Your Honor. You asked me what I thought he would have sentenced him to had the criminal history category been one. I believe that Judge Reinhart would have sentenced him towards the upper end, if not the upper end, of criminal history category one because of his evaluation of the 3553A factor, the seriousness of
the offense.
But the
sentence that he got exceeded that upper end, didn't it?
No, Your Honor.
Criminal history category one had been used, in other words, if these driving offenses had been disregarded in the judge's exercise of discretion, that would have made a three-year difference, is what we're being told, in the range?
I don't know that it's a full three-year difference. He got 114 months, which did exceed the upper end of the range had he been found in criminal history category one.
Okay. So it would have been an above-guideline sentence, basically.
The 114 would have been above guidelines.
But for these driving offenses.
That's correct.
Okay. What did the judge actually say about the driving offenses when he was asked to vary from the range based on the overstatement of the defendant's criminal history?
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Reinhart spent about a page and a half of the transcript going through those driving offenses, and he looked at the chronology of them. He found that the first one occurred, that the arrest occurred in January of 2007, I believe it was, that he pled guilty to that offense in June of 2007.
He never got prison or anything for this, right? I don't think this crime, driving under a suspended license, is considered serious, right? He just gets repeated probation, supervision, whatever.
Your Honor is correct. He did not receive incarceration for this. The first sentence was more lenient. He was sentenced to a fine. And then he committed the...
I mean, it's not that he can't drive. Why was... If Ms. Varner is right and he was just suspended because he didn't pay, his license fee or something like that, so presumably he can drive all right. So it's just that... that he shouldn't be, but he's not endangering people, is he?
It's not in the record in terms of why exactly he was pulled over.
Why would one think that? So as I count, if he'd given him the middle of the range of criminal history one, I mean, I understand your argument, but that would be 87 and a half months. So he got 26 and a half months for his driving violations. Almost two and a half years. So I'm not sure what sense that makes.
Well, Your Honor, one thing that I would point out is the guidelines do treat the offense of driving without a license as being more serious than a minor traffic.
Well, look, you have to know why the person is driving without a license. What if he's driving without a license because his license expired and he didn't notice it?
Well, I would argue, Your Honor, if that was the occasion on the first offense, then he would have noticed it by the time of number two and number three, and he should have done something to remedy that at that point.
Yes, he should have, and he should have known when his license was going to be expired. The question is whether it's the sort of thing for which you get an of course, the paradox is he commits these misdemeanors, and he's not given any prison. But Judge Reinhart has given him, in effect, two and a quarter years imprisonment, even though Illinois doesn't think his offense is serious enough to warrant any imprisonment. I don't understand the point. If he thinks that somehow, because he drives on a suspended license, he's more likely to commit to engage in another Ponzi scheme when he's released from prison, would anyone take that seriously?
Well, Your Honor, I think what the chronology of the offenses shows and what Judge Reinhart considered is that this defendant received a lenient sentence, and then he went back right back out and committed the same criminal conduct. Then he got arrested for the same criminal conduct, and then he did it again. He got arrested for the same criminal conduct again. So I think logically from
what
that...
What does that have to do with Ponzi schemes?
It is an indication...
What if this guy were a child pornographer? That's a serious offense, okay? But what would his being a child pornographer tell you about his propensity to recidivate, right? So he's a Ponzi guy. He's not someone who drives a getaway car for a robber, right? Ponzi.
That's right, Your Honor.
So why is he a more serious Ponzi offender because he doesn't obey the driving laws?
I think it's the fact that he repeatedly disobeys the same driving.
Probably he should be punished by Illinois. Someone should say to Illinois, look, you should take these offenses more seriously and put these people in jail instead of just giving them endless supervision, right? Why isn't that an Illinois problem rather than a federal problem?
I mean,
what Judge Reinhart is doing is enforcing Illinois driving laws.
I don't think he is, Your Honor. I think what he is...
But you're not going to tell me, are you, that someone who drives with a suspended license is more likely to commit a Ponzi scheme, to do a Ponzi?
What I am telling you, Your Honor, is that somebody who repeatedly engages in the same criminal conduct after receiving lenient sentences...
What does that have to do with Ponzi schemes?
I don't know that the types of the offenses are necessarily the issue. It's the fact
I think they are. Look... If Judge Reinhart thinks that this guy is more likely than another Ponzi schemer to recidivate because he violates the driving laws, well, I imagine one could think that, although I don't think it's serious. But I don't think Judge Reinhart went through that sort of analysis. I think all Judge Reinhart is doing is punishing local driving offenses under federal law. Where does he say someone who's a scofflaw like this can't be trusted not to continue to engage in financial fraud when he's released in, 12 years or something?
He does not say that, Your Honor. What he says is that this defendant...
So I don't see any analysis that suggests a federal interest in this use of the criminal history category.
Judge Reinhart...
Do you see a federal interest, or do you think it's fine for federal judges to punish people for local offenses?
Again, I disagree that he's punishing this defendant for local offenses.
What did he say that connects this to the Ponzi, to recidivism?
The fact that the defendant committed the same offense
repeatedly.
Well,
that's why I gave the example of child pornography, right? You wouldn't think that a child pornographer would, by virtue of being a child pornographer, be more likely to engage in Ponzi schemes than someone who wasn't a child pornographer, right?
That's correct.
Do you accept that?
Yes, sir.
Would you accept the proposition, counsel, that somebody who repeatedly acts as if the law simply doesn't apply to him presents a greater risk of future criminal conduct?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that's the point that Judge Reinhart was making. Mm-hmm.
Is there no need to account for differences in kind and degree in making that analysis?
In kind and degree? You're talking about the prior offenses.
That's the thrust of Judge Posner's questions, is that there is such a significant difference in kind and degree with driving on a suspended license and being the mastermind of a Ponzi scheme that the disconnect must be noted and grappled with meaningfully before tacking on additional time.
I agree with Your Honor that there is a significant difference in the kind and degree of offenses that were committed here. But as Judge Hamilton was pointing out, I think that...
How does Illinois punish this crime? What's the maximum penalty?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head.
Well, what's the maximum for a traffic misdemeanor?
I don't know that either. I'm sorry. Okay. I never practiced in state court.
Okay.
Now, what did Pontezello say about his driving offenses?
Other than what the appellate's counsel has pointed out, that it was some sort of financial reason for that.
And that's what he said? He said there's a financial reason? What did he say?
Other than that, I don't think he said anything, Your Honor.
Did he say anything or what? Or is the just lawyer... Is there something on the record about his... Does the record contain any statement by him relating to this suspended license business?
No, Your Honor, it does not.
Why not? Why didn't the judge ask him?
I don't know the answer to that, Your
Honor.
Well,
how could he make a judgment about the significance of these traffic offenses for recidivism without finding out the circumstances of these driving offenses? Is that responsible behavior by a judge?
I think Judge Reinhart did behave responsibly. He considered the
well,
fact...
Well, we don't know anything about these suspended offenses. The lawyer, I don't know, I suppose she knows, but apparently there's nothing in the record about why the license was suspended in the first case and why he kept driving anyway.
That's correct, Your Honor. There's nothing in the
record. Wouldn't that be helpful in connecting that to the likelihood of recidivism to know why he got into this trouble with driving?
I suppose it would, Your Honor. But I think the fact...
Well, why doesn't the U.S. attorney do that?
This is a case, counsel, wasn't it, where the defendant was seeking a below-guideline sentence?
That's correct,
Your
Honor.
Has the burden of persuasion?
That's correct. And the sentence that was imposed by Judge Reinhart was a sentence that was within the applicable guideline range. It was the defendant's burden to show that the presumption of reasonableness does not apply, and I don't think they've met that here, Your Honors, because we have repeated conduct that's occurred for the same offense. Your Honors, I see that my time has expired. I would
thank you, Mr. Versman. Ms. Barner, well, I think your time expired, but if you have something further? Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the defendant.